The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at a historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts. Hey, this is Annie.
And Samantha.
And welcome to Stuff I'll Never Told You, a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works.
Oh, this is going to make me hungry.
Yeah. It's very rare that we do episodes on this show that have cravings attached
right.
to them.
I'm going to need some pancakes now that we've been talking about them.
I could go for pancakes. I haven't had pancakes in forever.
We need to go to the Pancake Social right near us.
There is a pancake restaurant in here. I've never been to it. Not a sponsor, just located
it's been
near us.
On lists.
Lists, you say. Well, then we must go. Well, we're going to have to persevere through this first.
Yes. Here
and
we go.
I wanted to ask you, are you a cook, Samantha?
Well, I am a box or an instructions kind of cooker. Uh-huh. So essentially, if you hand me something and tell me to do it this way, then I'm like, cool, let me do that. Mm-hmm. But I'm also one of those worriers when it comes to cooking.
Oh, yeah.
So I will overcook almost everything.
Oh, really?
Yes, because I don't want to die or have some kind of body malfunction.
That's a good way to put it.
Because of my dinner, or I don't want anyone else to experience that. So chicken is always going to be a little more cooked than not. Mm-hmm. Fish, yeah, probably a little more cooked than not. Now, steak, I'm pretty good with. Mm-hmm. But if it's like ground beef, ground truck, ground turkey, yeah, I'm going to probably overcook that quite a bit. But I'm going to add a lot of spices to it.
Okay.
I'm pretty good at when it comes to baking, because you have to follow those instructions. There's no real way to like navigate away from that without making it a complete disaster.
Unless you are trained or have a good sense.
Right, a good sense. But even with baking, like, you have to have a certain amount of liquid to go with the,
sure.
you know, all of the dry, uh-huh. or you're going to have something really bad. If you have expired things, which I figured out, like baking powder or baking soda, mm-hmm. any of that, it messes up things as well. So
yeah.
that I've kind of figured out. Mm-hmm. But I'm also one of those that, oh, I did it! And then I try again, and I screw it up.
Yeah.
Somehow. Like, it turned out so well last time, and no one believes me.
It's the humidity.
Ugh.
I always blame the humidity.
Is that what it is?
Yes. I love cooking. I'm the opposite of you.
Right. You make full-on festive meals. I do those out of boxes, once again. Like, everything comes out of a macaroni and cheese box or canned veggies that I'm going to reheat somehow.
Yeah. Yeah, I love it. I don't necessarily love the obligation of it. It was something I struggled with for a while when I was like, I'm a feminist now. Should I cook for other people? The answer is yes.
Yeah.
But it's fine.
Yeah,
if you like to do it, then yeah. But I am I'm risky, perhaps, with my behavior cooking. I don't overcook. I'll be on the edge of...
No.
Yeah, so that's an interesting...
So that means I'm not going to eat at your house.
No, if other people come,
okay,
then I won't risk your health.
You're not going to be trying one of those that's like, look, chicken, medium well, or medium. I'm like, what the hell's wrong with you? You're going to die.
I won't impose my behavior upon you, yes, or any of my uncooked food.
But you know, my first experience, and maybe this is why I like boxed things, is from my Easy Bake Oven. All you do is add water, and then you stick it into the light bulb.
I wanted an Easy Bake Oven so badly, and I got it as a gift when I was seven, like, way too old for it. I said, I haven't asked for this in
last
years.
Year?
So I just got it and kind of put it away and donated it.
Look, I love those sugary paper tasting cookies so much.
Well, I was very jealous of you. I didn't know you, but I used to... in my French class, we had a day where everyone would bring in desserts. And at the time, I wasn't that into cooking. And I would bring in a Duncan Hines brownie box mix every year. And people loved it. And they would always ask me the recipe. And I would act all coy. Oh, it's a secret recipe. As far as I know, no one ever figured it out.
Oh, you're a commercial. Well, that's what they do in commercials.
Is it?
It's a family recipe, and then you took a look around, and it's like a box of something, yeah.
People were they wanted it so badly. I even had one of my schoolmates' mom ask me for it. Well, you know, a little of this, a little of that. But we're not talking about Duncan Hines today, who is a real person. We're talking about some famous female faces on food products.
Which is one big famous box product.
What?
Betty Crocker. She has all those box products.
Yes, exactly. Betty Crocker, Aunt Jemima, and Mrs. Butterworth, briefly. And since this is a time of a lot of cooking for many of us, we thought it would be timely, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will be bringing some kind of dessert to my Friendsgiving, Friends Christmas thing for their meal.
Friends Christmas.
Yes, Feastmas.
Oh, I like
that. That's what they named it, because we also do like little... whatever, white elephant thing.
Oh, sure,
Dirty
sure.
Santa.
Mm-hmm. Dirty Santa.
Isn't that what it's called?
I think that might be a different thing. Maybe not.
No. I think this... Someone's going to tell me something else. Don't send me anything. Don't send me pictures.
Don't send any Dirty Santa pictures, please. It is SantaCon as we record this.
Well, unless, you know, it's really good.
No. I'm the one who has to deal with the inbox. Don't do it. And I just want to say... before we get into this, that when I was researching it, I got a ton of results, like the top 5 sexiest food icons. This made me think, why does the green M&M have to be sexy?
Because the legend, that if you're eating it, it's going to make you horny.
The green M&M?
Yes.
Specifically?
Like, always, I grew up knowing this, and we were all felt a little naughty. We'd save the green for last.
What?
I don't think it worked, though.
I would be shocked if it did. I have never heard this. Wow.
We knew this growing up. The green M&M.
The things you know when you're a kid.
The things you believe and think you're so witty when you're a kid.
And then the red M&Ms were poison.
Oh, no, I didn't hear that. Brown M&Ms are like, whatever.
Yeah.
But
I liked the blue ones.
Oh, of course. Mm-hmm. I actually really like the yellow ones.
This is a real journalistic
deep
diver going
in. Keep going now.
Okay, so let's talk about Betty Crocker.
Let's.
There's a fascinating history here. Until she was dethroned by Flo of the insurance. What insurance is that?
Progressive.
Progressive.
Progressive has like 10 representatives, and one of them is that, and...
Okay, so Flo, Betty Crocker was the most famous fictional female in the U.S., according to Adweek. A 2015 New York Daily News article listed her alongside Barbie, Santa Claus, and Uncle Sam as one of the world's most influential fictional figures.
Wow.
Over 200 grocery products carry her name. These days, Betty Crocker graces many boxes of cake mix and canned icing, but she used to be someone women could contact for cooking advice. Dear Betty Crocker, my cake won't rise. Dear Betty Crocker, what's the secret to fluffy pancakes? Dear Betty Crocker, I need a good pie recipe. Betty Crocker not only provided the answers to cooking questions like these, she was also a proponent of trying new things in the kitchen, and she would be there as a safety net if something went wrong.
But now for the important question. Is she a real person? And the answer is nope. The Washburn Crosby Company, a flour milling company which would go on to become General Mills, developed the character of Betty Crocker as a part of an advertising campaign. So Washburn Crosby got started in 1880, entered the international milling competition with their new flour, and they won the gold medal. They were so thrilled that they changed the name of their product to Gold Medal Flour, which still exists, and the number one selling brand of flour to this day.
Yeah. In 1921, the company decided to run an ad for Gold Medal Flour in the Saturday Evening Post. The ad consisted of a jigsaw puzzle of a small town square, and the prize for correctly solving the puzzle and sending it in was a gold medal flower-shaped pincushion, which I actually would really like myself, even though I don't sew.
Wait, is it like a shape of the actual bag of
like
flour?
Yeah, like the bag of flour.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Over 30,000 people sent completed puzzles to Washburn and Crosby, and a lot of them included baking questions, to the company's surprise. The smallish advertising department, composed entirely of men and led by Samuel Gale, had dealt with customer questions and complaints previously. They would direct these questions to the women who worked at the Gold Medal Home Service staff. However, Gale wasn't a fan of using his name when he signed off on this advice. He suspected the customers would rather get advice from a woman, who, of course, did most of the cooking in the home at the time, gender norms being what they were. The very fact that these men consulted women before answering questions reinforces that that whole thing, that whole idea. And most people writing in were women.
The amount of questions the company received as a part of the contest really emphasized the need for a woman to answer these questions, so a woman people would trust. So they invented a fictional woman to fill their needs. Betty Crocker. Her last name was actually borrowed from William G. Crocker, who at the time had just retired as the director of Washburn Crosby. The first name was chosen because it sounded all-American, both cheery and unthreatening. With the name decided upon, they needed a signature. A female employees were called upon to submit their ideas. The winning signature was Secretary Florence Lindbergh's. So any letter answering a customer's question would be signed Betty Crocker, quote-unquote. People were even trained to match the signature. Such was the demand for Betty Crocker. The company created the Betty Crocker Kitchens, cooking schools that they sponsored throughout the country. Women who worked in the home ec department at the company who were involved in answering mail addressed to Betty were called the Crockettes.
The Crockettes.
Which is really kind of gross sounding. I don't know why.
For 3 years, Betty Crocker existed primarily in written format or in name at these schools. That changed in 1924 when she debuted on Washburn Crosby's new radio cooking show on Minneapolis's WCCO, which stood for Washburn Crosby Company. This was a station they saved, the company saved from bankruptcy. The show was called Betty Crocker Cooking School of the Air. Graduates of the on-air school sent in reports to be graded by Betty Crocker. That first year, there were 238 graduates. The show was written and hosted by home economist Marjorie Child Husted. The show pretty quickly went nationwide after that, and each region had their own Betty Crocker voice. The scripts were written at the company's national headquarters. It had featured prominent guests like Joan Crawford and Cary Grant. In 1927, the radio show became a part of the new NBC network, where it would remain for 24 years. Over a million listeners enrolled into the on-air cooking show over that time.
So when Husted was later asked about the whole thing, she said, "It is very interesting to me to look back now and realize how concerned I was about the welfare of women as homemakers and their feelings of self-respect. Women needed a champion. Here were millions of them staying at home alone, doing a job with children, cooking, cleaning on minimal budgets. The whole depressing mess of it. They needed someone to remind them that they had value." Aww. Very smart.
Yeah. The first grocery item bearing Betty Crocker's name was a soup mix in 1941. The cake mix appeared a few years later in 1947, and then in 1950, Betty Crocker's picture cookbook hit the shelves. It sold 2 million copies in its first 2 years and has sold over 60 million copies since, and it's still available under the name The Betty Crocker Cookbook.
My parents have that.
Do they really?
Mm-hmm.
It is sometimes referred to as the Kitchen Bible or Big Red. Recipes complete with pictures, that was a new thing. That was very exciting at the time. It was another way to make cooking less intimidating. In 1945, Fortune magazine named her the second most popular woman in the United States behind Eleanor Roosevelt. They also outed her as a fraud, that she wasn't a real person, but nobody seemed to care.
Nope.
And this whole thing led to her nickname, the First Lady of Food. Surveys from this time period found that 9 out of 10 women were familiar with Betty Crocker. She was getting about 5,000 letters a day. Oh. According to Susan Marks in her book, Finding Betty Crocker, The Secret Life of America's First Lady of Food, people who visited the headquarters to find out Betty Crocker wasn't real often started crying, and the company even kept tissues at hand for this.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I guess that's really heartbreaking.
And I think we forget, too, there was no internet at this time.
Yeah.
You're really dependent on either people you knew in your life teaching you or sharing their recipes with you, or recipe books. And if you're trying to mix things up, especially on a budget, which women were pretty judged for at that time,
right,
how fancy of a thing can you make this cheap thing? That's why we got things like aspics.
Mm-hmm.
That is a lot of stress. And I'm sure it was very comforting to have someone you could call and who would just be someone you could talk to about
right.
it. At the behest of the U.S. Office of War Information in 1945, Betty Crocker spent 4 months on the radio show Our Nation's Rations, aimed at helping listeners be creative and resourceful when it came to cooking with rationed foods. In parallel, there was a Betty Crocker pamphlet about the same thing called Your Share. 7 million copies of it were distributed. A second pamphlet, Through Highway to Good Nutrition, was recognized by the American Red Cross for contributing to the national interest.
Well, that's big.
Mm-hmm.
So in 1951, the advent of televisions in home across the U.S. meant Washburn Crosby needed to find someone to be the face and voice of Betty Crocker. They hired actress Adelaide Holloway for the role. Betty Crocker showed up a handful of television programs at the time, including Betty Crocker Television Show and the Betty Crocker Star Matinee. There were illustrations previously. The first official portrait, completed in 1936, was a composite of the faces of the women who worked in Washburn Crosby's home service department by Nasa McMain. It didn't change for 2 decades. The image has since been updated 7 times to reflect current taste. In 1965, she was depicted as sort of a Jackie Kennedy-esque, but in general, she stayed pretty much the same. A white woman with brown hair around the age of 32, wearing red and white. A 1996 rendition by painter John Stuart Ingall did image her with olive skin in an attempt to make her more inclusive. He created this portrayal based on 75 images of women General Mills thought captured the spirit of Betty Crocker. By observing the evolution of Betty Crocker, we can get an idea of the evolution of American women.
Yeah, and especially how we perceive them. From 1954 to 1977, high school seniors competed for scholarships around their skills in home ec and the Betty Crocker Search for the All-American Homemaker of Tomorrow. The Betty Crocker Monthly Recipe Magazine debuted in 1972, called Sphere. The Betty Crocker Magazine, I found an excellent archive of all of them.
Wow.
And people are still into this magazine.
Yeah.
They remember this recipe that's so good, and they try to find it on the archive. In the comment section, you can see people helping each other out.
Oh, I bet just researching the levels of ingredients and recipes,
yeah.
I wonder how that has changed over time.
Yes.
Challenge.
Fascinating stuff.
Let's do this.
Oh, don't tempt me. The magazine opened with this quote, "As women, we're lucky to be alive right now. Amid the universal tumult, it's more than ever a woman's world with 20th century reality located somewhere between the swooning vapors of Victorian forebears and the militant fervor of women's lib."
Wow, those are some really big extremes.
So 70s.
Can I be the swooning Victorian?
Yes.
Okay, cool,
yeah.
Cool. So nowadays, she has a website full of recipes and advice. When the Betty Crocker iPad app, debuted in 2010, it was among the most popular free apps. Betty Crocker pamphlets are available in grocery stores still. Really?
Yeah.
Wow. In 2014, she got some media attention when the company started supplying same-sex wedding cakes in Minnesota, their home state. When gay marriage was legalized, the company gifted the first 3 gay couples married in Minnesota with gifts and a wedding cake. In the same year, her website launched 30 cakes for 30 days of Ramadan. The Middle East is the brand's second largest market. A 2016 update of her cookbook added an entire chapter for vegetarians and recipes like chicken tagine. It's also been translated into Spanish. Other books have been added to the enterprise as well, like Betty Crocker's Home Indian Cooking. 250 books with her name have been published. At General Mills headquarters in Minnesota, there's a Betty Crocker available for questions 24/7.
So now if you go, there will be a Betty Crocker. If you go looking for Betty Crocker, someone will be there.
Wait, so, like, do they just all change it out? I guess there's a shift.
Oh, there's shifts. Sure.
I would hate to be on the night shift.
I would love to interview someone who's been Betty Crocker.
Does anybody know anyone that's been Betty Crocker?
Oh, please let us know.
We need to interview Betty Crocker.
Oh, missed opportunity.
Can we have a 10-minute session where people send in questions?
Yes, I would love to.
Oh, I think that'd be awesome.
Yeah. I have to say, the story of Betty Crocker was a lot more interesting than I thought it was going
to be. It is very interesting.
And it's also a great... It just shows how we've changed, and it's interesting to look at it through this character.
And it's kudos to them progressing.
Yeah.
Yes. Over time.
Yes. Well, we have some other food characters to talk about, but first we have a quick break for a word from our sponsor.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at a historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly boring since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Oh, is it time for the sexy syrups?
Apparently, Samantha doesn't agree with my characterization of syrups, but I find most commercials depict them as sexy.
I see. All I think is sticky, and I don't like it.
Well, not to get too into sex in this episode, but isn't that a thing? People put, like, honey or syrup on people's bodies
don't
and
do that.
Lick it off?
Ew.
All right.
All I can think of is, like, ugh.
Well, we agree to disagree.
Sexy syrup time.
I'm not saying they are sexy. I'm just saying they're depicted as sexy.
Fair.
Yes. And so we're talking about Aunt Jemima. This discussion around sexy syrup goes back to my question of why every character we're talking about is somehow related to pancakes and syrup. Didn't find the answer to that. But we're going to talk about, yes, Aunt Jemima. She is the face of a line of pancake mixes and syrups. To get to the bottom of Aunt Jemima's history, we have to go back to 1890 and a former slave by the name of Nancy Green, then living in Chicago after being born into slavery in 1834 in Kentucky. The original creators of the mascot, Charles Rutt and Charles Underwood, came up with her look of an apron and bandana in 1889. They had just purchased Pearl Milling Company, and they were looking for someone to represent their new idea of a self-rising pancake flour that only required water. And this is one of the first mixes available in the U.S. They drew inspiration for this character from a minstrel show that was popular at the time. And just a refresher, minstrel shows were a popular 19th century and later form of American entertainment in which white actors in blackface portrayed black people as lazy, stupid, easily frightened, and highly superstitious. A popular song of these minstrel shows was penned in 1875 by a black performer, Billy Kersands, and it was called Old Aunt Jemima. In minstrel shows, it was performed by people in blackface, and a white man portrayed Aunt Jemima as a slave on a southern plantation. He wore the look that they ended up going with.
Mm-hmm. The two original creators of Aunt Jemima's character in regards to selling a food product sold their company the same year they came up with her to R.T. Davis. He found Nancy Green and with her created the Aunt Jemima brand.
People were intensely curious about the true identity of Aunt Jemima, so much so that the police were called to control the crowd at the Aunt Jemima exhibit at the 1893 World's Columbian Exposition. Green served thousands of people that visited the exhibit pancakes, and people reportedly were so charmed by her kind demeanor that she was awarded for her showmanship at the exhibition. As a result of her extremely successful appearance there, the company received 50,000 orders for their pancake mix in the wake of it. They renamed their company to Aunt Jemima Mills Company in 1914, and they were so impressed with Green's performance, they offered her a lifetime position as their spokesperson as sales of their products continued to soar. However, that came to an abrupt end in 1923 when she lost her life in a car crash.
The owner, R.T. Davis, was forced to sell the company to Quaker Oats due to financial issues soon after. Anna Robinson was tapped to be the new face of Aunt Jemima, a portrait now appearing on packages. She also appeared at the 1933 World's Fair, which was followed by Chicago-based blues singer and actress Edith Wilson. She became the first person to appear as the character in commercials. And at this time, ads still included racial dialects like Isa. Former teacher and actress Ethel Ernestine Harper assumed the mantle after Wilson. After that, an advertising employee at Quaker Oats named Rosie Hall took on this position. Once she died, her grave was deemed as a historical landmark. In 1955, Eileen Lewis made her first public appearance as the mascot of Aunt Jemima Restaurant in Disneyland. Anna Short Harrington also did a stint as Aunt Jemima at public events in the New York area.
The Aunt Jemima radio show ran from 1930 to 1942. Jemima was played by a white blackface actress who portrayed Aunt Jemima in other formats. It was essentially a minstrel show for radio. As early as the 1950s, people were questioning the racist undertones of Aunt Jemima. The NAACP started strongly recommending that schools not invite Aunt Jemima to speak at them. Increased public scrutiny led Quaker Oats to cancel a television campaign in 1967, around the time we got the Civil Rights Act, and ditch her name from their Disneyland restaurant. The brand updated Aunt Jemima's image in 1989 in an effort to avoid criticisms of a mammy stereotype. Gone was the headscarf, traded out instead for a lace collar and pearl earrings, and her skin was lightened. She also gradually got thinner. Many historians argue that the mammy stereotype is a stereotype of something that never existed. Instead, it was a fiction cooked up by white Southerners to placate themselves around relationships between white men and enslaved black women. The mammy was sexually undesirable, not a threat to white women or social norms, happy to serve the white man, and played into the narrative that black women were happy to be enslaved.
According to Kimberly Wallace Sanders in her book, Mammy, A Century of Race, Gender, and Southern Memory, quote, Aunt Jemima's success was predicated upon a fascinating interweaving of commerce, memory, and racial nostalgia that served as a vehicle of post-Civil War national consolidation. An African-American woman pretending to be a slave was pivotal to be the trademark's commercial achievement in 1893. Its success revolved around the fantasy of returning a black woman to a sanitized version of slavery. The Aunt Jemima character involved a regression of race relations, and her character helped usher in a prominent resurgence of the happy slave mythology of the antebellum South. This popular recreation of an African-American woman's life stood in direct opposition to the efforts of real African-American women struggling to publicly assert their citizenship. As a symbol of racial harmony, Aunt Jemima proved to be a preferred version of African-American womanhood and exaltation of slaveocracy nostalgia. Beginning in 1993, Gladys Knight appeared in ads for spokespersons for Quaker Oats, very briefly presented her as Aunt Jemima herself.
As of 2014, two of Harrington's great-grandsons were suing Aunt Jemima's parent company, Quaker Oats, for $2 billion for unpaid royalties and damages. Harrington played Aunt Jemima previously. According to them, their mother and Green, Nancy Green, were instrumental in developing the self-rising pancake mix. Even before she was Aunt Jemima, Harrington had a reputation for her delicious pancakes. One of Harrington's great-grandsons wrote in the suit, Aunt Jemima has become known as one of the most exploited and abused women in American history.
Yeah, it's really kind of gross. I was wondering how much they paid these women.
Yeah. I'm sure it was not
at all reasonable.
Yeah, yeah. So that's a bit of a, that's a pretty dark history
right.
for that. We do have a little bit more for you, but first we have one more quick break for a word from our sponsor.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at a historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor. And we're back with Mrs. Butterworth.
More syrup.
More syrup, I'm telling you. So I didn't even consider her when I was originally planning who to involve in this episode.
Right.
But that the study we mentioned earlier is finding Betty Crocker is the most recognized woman in the United States or whatever. Mrs. Butterworth was behind her.
Which is interesting. I do, like, as we're talking, I can see the picture of the children talking to the bottle.
Yeah.
That's what I'm seeing right now. But right. Yeah, I do remember that commercial pretty distinctly.
They have a whole wealth of commercials available throughout the decades, mm-hmm. if you would like to see them. So, yes, let's talk about her. She is now synonymous with a brand of box pancake mixes and syrups, although her most iconic iteration is as the shape of the pancake syrup bottles. That shape, a bottle in the shape of Mrs. Butterworth, a woman, was patented in 1966. Mrs. Butterworth is unique in this sense. She is one of a few, if not the only, products shaped after their namesake. I couldn't really think of anybody else.
All right.
She's sort of a grandmotherly in her shape, a button-down dress with a collar, a wide skirt. Her hair is up in a bun. I suppose the sweetness of syrup is sort of symbolic of the sweetness we assume women have.
She does cross her hands perfectly into her lap almost.
Yeah. Since gender norms at the time place women in charge of all things domestic, including the kitchen, she, in theory, if she was a real person, would know what she was talking about. These are the speculations when I was really trying to get to the bottom of why.
Why?
Why?
Just why.
Just why. Mrs. Butterworth's history is a bit murky. First off, when you search Mrs. Butterworth, one of the first suggested search terms is Mrs. Butterworth black? Mm-hmm. Rumor has it she was originally modeled after actress Thelma Butterfly McQueen, who posed for the iconic bottle soon after she wrapped up filming as the mammy character Prissy in Gone with the Wind. However, that doesn't really square with her first on-air appearance, where actress Cliff Arquette, as Charlie Weaver, presented her as an older white woman. Actress Mary Kay Bergman went on to later provide the voice of Mrs. Butterworth, similarly in the style of an older white woman.
A lot of questions around racism in Mrs. Butterworth seems to stem from her proximity to and perhaps mimicry of Aunt Jemima. In 2009, Pinnacle Foods revealed Mrs. Butterworth's first name is Joy. Prior to the reveal, the company launched a contest encouraging people to guess the name. Two people won $500 for correctly guessing, and a case of the syrup, of course. Mm-hmm. This is interesting because, according to a brand manager, no one bothered to ask what the first name was until an employee's son asked. This could be because she's fictional, or it could be because, at least partly, because the most important part of her identity is that she's married, right. Obviously.
Right. What else do you need to know? She's married.
Her worth is marriage, duh.
Her worth is butter.
Marriage.
An Onion headline from 2017 read, Mike Pence asks waiter to remove Mrs. Butterworth from table until wife arrives, poking fun at his reluctance / refusal to be alone with a woman other than his wife. Here is the article. It's really brief. Expressing concerns about the propriety of being left alone with a syrup container of the opposite sex, Vice President Mike Pence reportedly asked the waiter Thursday to remove Mrs. Butterworth from the table until his wife arrived to join him at a local diner. "Excuse me, sir, would you please take this out of my line of sight until my wife gets here?" said Pence, who reportedly attempted to put the table sugar dispenser and salt and pepper shakers between him and the feminine syrup bottle, before deciding that even having Mrs. Butterworth within arm's reach could lead him to have impure thoughts. "It just would not be right for me to sit here alone with a woman-shaped container, particularly one as shapely as this. In fact, I would advise you to do the same for the man sitting over there. I see he's sitting very close to Mrs. Butterworth, even though he appears to be wearing a wedding ring." At press time, Pence had asked the waiter to pour syrup on his pancakes for him, as it would be unseemly to handle the curves of the plastic woman in such a public place.
Wait, isn't she like a bell shape?
She is, but one of the second most returned search items for me was what happened to Mrs. Butterworth's boobs. And there's a whole Reddit thread about, didn't she used to have big boobs? What happened to the boobs?
I don't remember boobs. Most maybe because I wasn't looking for them, maybe?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Most people seem to say they were at the 80s shape.
Well, apparently, a commercial that came out in early 2019 depicted Colonel Sanders of KFC and Mrs. Butterworth, the life-size bottle. What? Flirting?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So Mrs. Butterworth makes the first move, so I guess that's progress. Sure. She's the one that's coming on to him. And they go in for a kiss, and the commercial ends. A cliffhanger none of us ever expected to have to contemplate. Ever.
No.
No. It cuts instead to a syrup-covered waffles, an ad for their fried chicken and waffles, and another example of the sexualization of food. Maybe? See? Yeah, no. This was a sequel to the previous ad for the same product that depicted the two mascots recreating the scene from the end of Dirty Dancing.
Yes. And I happened to see that I wasn't looking for this ad. It happened to come up for me when I was watching a YouTube video today. And it's Ghost. It's the scene from Ghost.
Oh, where they're doing
the clay thing. Uh-oh. And I think...
But wait, is it Dirty Dancing or is it a clay thing?
I think there's more than one.
So they just really like Patrick Swayze. Is what you're trying to tell me.
That could be true. I mean... Well, I learned that they have a Nashville Hot version of this now for limited time. So,
of course. I'm not going to lie. That sounds delicious, okay? First and foremost. However, do I want it to be sexualized? No. I don't want to think about Colonel Sanders being sexual. Neither do I want to think Mrs. Butterworth. You do you. I want to be
oblivious. Are you telling Mrs. Butterworth to
I'm telling her to do her thing.
Her best life.
Do your thing. I'm just going to eat the chicken with some syrup.
Oh, my gosh. It is really creepy. It reminds me of the Burger King mascot. Because it's the life-size bottle.
They are, that's not okay.
It's
you already know how I feel
her.
About life-size
that's
things
true.
Coming to life.
Mm-hmm.
Inanimate objects coming to life. So this is not cool.
Mrs. Butterworth coming after
also,
you.
Also, I can't even say the word syrup. Right, syrup, syrup. So this is a nightmare in itself.
There's a lot of layers of terror happening. Well, it was a successful ad, I would say, because we're talking about it, we remember it, but also, I believe...
I'm trying to forget it.
You'll never forget it.
Son of a...
You'll never forget it. There actually wasn't that much out there on Mrs. Butterworth. So if any listeners happen to have the lowdown on any of the
again,
people,
don't send me pictures.
Don't send me pictures of whatever you said earlier. I'll take pictures of Mrs. Butterworth.
Neither.
Okay.
You don't want Dirty Santa?
I don't want anything about Dirty Santa. Everything else is open. I will take it. We do have a pretty strong spam filter. And obviously, there are a lot of other things we could have talked about when it comes to food mascots, female food mascots, like the Land of Lakes, Wendy, Little Debbie, Morton Salt Girl, Chiquita Banana, Sun Maiden from the Raisins, the green M&M, and now the brown M&M.
Yeah. Well, did you know, did I ever tell you the story, side note, about the dude that I went on a couple of dates with talking about knowing Little Debbie, the woman?
Oh, really?
Yeah, and how awful she was.
So she's real.
She's apparently real.
Okay. Yeah.
He could have lied, but I'm just saying, he told me the story. I was like, cool.
If it's a listener of ours, I actually have no idea how old Little Debbie is.
I don't either.
Well, if anybody has information on that, we welcome that as well. And if food things are of interest of you, as always, you can hear more of me nerding out about food over on the Savor Podcast. But if you would like to contact this podcast...
What?
Yes, you can. You can email us at stuffmediamomstuff@iheartmedia.com. You can find us on Twitter at @MomStuffPodcast or on Instagram at @StuffMomNeverToldYou. Thanks as always to our super producer, Andrew Howard.
Have a silky day.
And thanks to you for listening. Stuff Mom Never Told You is a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise, all things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at a historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.